Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Broke Girl Society podcast. I'm your host, Christina. Thank you so much for listening in. All right. Well, before we get started with this week's episode, I wanted to comment on a comment that I receive quite often. And people have asked me this. I've done speaker meetings and things like that. So I just want to just make my feelings known. I know I've probably talked about this in different episodes and things like that, but the question of anonymity in recovery comes up a lot. And in a few speaker meetings I've done, and people have said, well, anonymity saves lives, and you know what you're doing could risk people's lives. And you know, when I hear that, you know, my response to that is, well, I think sharing our story saves lives too, right? It helps people understand that they aren't alone, that there is hope, that there is a way out, and to just put a hand out and reach out. You know, other people have been able to navigate addiction and recovery, and you can too. And so that's why I have felt from very early on in my own recovery that I wanted to share my story. I wanted to break the stigma of a female who gambled and caused harm. And I wanted other people to hear that. And, you know, that led to the podcast, and it led to other people saying, hey, I want to share my story too. And, you know, even in the 12-step groups, it says, take our stories to other gamblers. And I don't advertise to be a part of any 12-step group. I am just Christina, a woman who is in recovery for compulsive gambling, who's sharing her story to bring awareness. And, you know, that's it. And anybody who comes on this podcast to share their story, they want to do it to help others. And I completely respect anybody's opinion. Not everybody has the privilege to share their story for whatever reason, whether it's going to cause harm in their families or with their jobs or their communities. Like, I get that that's not something everybody can do. And when I think of anonymity, I think of how sacred the rooms are. You know, we don't come out of those rooms and say, hey, I saw so-and-so and they said this. You know, that their story belongs to them. It belongs to the safe spaces of the rooms. The podcasting world is a little bit different because it's like-minded people who are coming on, who are sharing our stories and, you know, talking about all the different resources and things available. So I hope that that kind of clarifies where I'm at with if I feel bad about doing what I'm doing. No, I don't. I had a comment one time on Twitter or X or whatever it was saying that, you know, by keeping my anonymity, I am saving lives. And hey, you know, more power to you. However you can help, whatever you do, that's wonderful. But for me, I think by sharing our stories, we're doing the same thing and we're helping other people know they're not alone. And for me, that's always going to be worth it. So I just want to clarify that. I'm not on a soapbox or anything about it, but sometimes you get to see that comment so much or you get somebody says something to you in a meeting. And at the end of the day, I'm just Christina, a recovering compulsive gambler who wants to help others know that they're not alone. And I think everybody who comes on this podcast has that same thought process, and they want to spread their hope. So, all right, well, let's get into this episode with my buddy, Brian Ward. He is host of the Voices podcast. He is one of the coolest dudes. He's a great musician. He has an awesome beard, and he's just a great guy to talk to. So here we go. The Broke Girl Society podcast is sponsored by the Better Institute, where people go to get better. Visit them at betterinstitute.com. And also Birch's Health, an online gambling recovery platform where you can find therapists online. You can visit them for more information at birchshealth.com. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Christina. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Doing okay. I'm currently recovering from a surgery, so I'm feeling much better than I was a couple weeks ago.
Oh man, I didn't even know you had surgery. I'm such a bad friend.
Oh, I've mainly kept it on the down low. This is my big entrance into this. I really wanted to catch everybody off guard.
Right. Well, I wish people could see your shirt because you wore this a couple of years ago when we were in Boston. And it's your dad joke loading shirt. But I have to say, you don't look like the typical dad joke guy. I just have to
Oh.
say, for people who don't know what you look like, you've got this big red beard, and yeah, but I remember you wearing that and I thought it was funny.
Yeah, it was a Father's Day gift, as topical as that is, and it's actually led to some pretty lively discussions around what constitutes a dad joke. So, more to come on that.
Sure, we'll circle back to that. So, if you wouldn't mind just kind of giving our listeners an insight of who you are a podcast host, you do Voices the podcast as part of your own recovery and to spread awareness, right?
I am the host of Voices the Podcast, which is a podcast that looks at different programs of recovery and different modalities of recovery to just try to offer some insight into those, to raise awareness around the different options that there are, and try to give people some sense of footing around what might be interesting to pursue. So, it's not meant to be prescriptive or anything like that. It's really just meant to have representatives of those different modalities come forward and say, "This is my experience with these programs, and this is the value that I took from them." So, it's really meant to be kind of a level playing field, that there is no wrong answer, that rather, these are all of the choices that you have, and let's see which one is the best fit for you. I'm also a certified gambling recovery mentor, which is a peer support kind of specialist. I know that you've spoken with Kitty Martz, who is also a CGRM in Oregon. And then I'm a facilitator for SMART Recovery, which is self-management and recovery training. So I would say I'm probably most versed in the SMART Recovery realm. But I have a little bit of kind of conversational experience in quite a few different programs. So.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this talk because there's been a lot of conversation lately, not only in the BGS, but through other means that, they're trying to find people kind of get overwhelmed with what's available, right? Or maybe they're not necessarily connecting with what's available. And so to have a conversation about different options, different ways that we can explore recovery, I think is going to be extremely beneficial. And one of those as you've talked about and shared, is SMART recovery. And I would like to kind of know, I know some of the basics of it. I've done a workshop or two through SMART recovery, and it's got a wonderful tool-based setup. So can we get into it a little bit?
Yeah, I mean that was a great I almost just said thank you, have a good week, but it is it's very much around developing skills and tools through the lens of cognitive behavioral therapy. So in my work as a CGRM, it's also kind of my approach, which is to take a look at how people manage their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, which is for a lot of us kind of an effective tool set to have. To be able to say, like, okay, I'm identifying my thoughts and my feelings, and then how are my behaviors aligning with my goals and my values? And are they reactive to these thoughts and feelings, or are they responsive to them? And there is a difference. One of them is a little more impulsive, and one of them is a little bit more thoughtful. So being able to kind of slow the moment down and just say, what is the reality of what I'm dealing with here? What are the facts? And then what are the feelings and the thoughts that come from that? Is there anything to dispute? Is there anything that I'm not sure of? And if so, let's identify those parts too. Now, that's just one of the principles of SMART recovery. It's founded on four kind of pillars of principality. I'm not sure if that's a real word, but I'm going to use it. So the first one is building and maintaining motivation. And what I love about that is that it's not for a facilitator or anyone else to decide what is a good sense of motivation, right? Anything that brought you into the meeting is a good starting point. whether it's for self-improvement or because your family is needing some change out of you, whatever it is, that's a building block, and we can grow that while trying to maintain a sense of kind of forward momentum. The second one is coping with urges, which most people, I think when they come into the room, that's the one that they're really looking on is how do I cope with all the things that I'm going through, all the triggers and the urges. And there are certainly skill sets around that. We already talked about managing thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. And then the fourth one is living a balanced life. And much like building and maintaining motivation, it's not my job to tell you what life balance is supposed to look like. Right? You need to go to work for 8 hours a day. You need to sleep. No, it's more about you finding a life that is comfortable and sustainable for you. And a lot of times where people come in thinking that it's about coping with urges, a lot of times that life balance part ends up being a pretty massive part of their recovery journey. So from those four principles, we put together a certain toolbox. Smart recovery is science-based, which means that it evolves with the time. So we're currently on our third edition of the workbook. And as we notice that things are introduced that may prove effective, we might add that into the fourth edition. As we notice that some things may have become obsolete or are no longer relevant to the society, they may be taken out. Given that it's science-based, we do tend to follow a scientific model. I'm saying we, like I'm one of the designers of it. I'm a facilitator. I'm trained on how to run a meeting, right? But it is something that I'm really passionate about because of how much value I took from it. I'm somebody that did 12-step and smart recovery simultaneously for a few years. So this is in no way meant to be a competition of like this one's better than that. It's an alternative, it's an option, and a lot of people do see value from both.
Yeah, and I would think working them at the same time too. It's like if it kind of helps you develop different ways of recovery, right? So if you're doing 12 steps and you're working on kind of that internal, some of those internal issues that the 12 steps usually will kind of pinpoint on, and then you're doing smart recovery, which kind of pulls in like just like self-assessment skills and like, you know, really honing in on that balance where, you know, you're not necessarily talking about those things in the 12 steps. So I could see where it could be beneficial really to do both at the same time. Now, can you, as somebody who has done both at the same time, can you point out like a really like a difference that you saw between the two that really was impactful? Is that a weird question to ask, but just something that you kind of picked up from one that maybe you weren't getting from the other.
I can, and I want to make sure that this comes through as respectfully as intended, right? We
Sure.
are acknowledging that there are differences, but in no way is that meant to be a dig on one. So one of the things that I loved about 12-step was the sense of community, right? They have their retreats and their barbecues and their birthday celebrations and all of that. Those things aren't really relevant to smart recovery. SMART does recognize the need for community as a resource. They just don't try to be that for people, right? Like being able to acknowledge the importance of it and then saying, now, because this is self-management, we acknowledge it, go find it. Go find your sense of community. Go find like-minded individuals working towards common goals. So that's probably one of the most stark differences is that sense of community. There's no sponsorship program or anything comparable in SMART. You show up, you go to a meeting, you learn a tool, and you, okay, see you next week, right? On the other hand, I think SMART gave me something very tangible, very palpable. It gave me tools, things that, okay, I'm going to work on accepting the things I can't control. And I'm going to widen my toolbox so that there are more things I can do, so that there are things that maybe I didn't realize at first that I had control over, like being able to manage my thoughts and feelings, not suppress them, not control them, but learn how to process them. All of a sudden, that doesn't sound as amorphous. It doesn't sound as scary to be faced with those things and like, well, it's beyond my control. Not beyond. There's just a different way of having a sense of control. Like, I can control my behaviors. I absolutely can make decisions. And those are the things that I do have the power over. So I like to say in my meeting that there was a time that I was totally able to acknowledge my powerlessness over my addiction. Absolutely. And through the use of kind of both of these programs simultaneously, I was able to control my behaviors around my addiction. So it's not something that I feel like I've cured, but much like other chronic illnesses, you can learn to manage it. You can learn to manage symptoms. You can learn to get to a place where there's treatment for it. So that's in my mind, kind of the two most comparable or what's the word I'm looking for? the two biggest contrasts.
Well, and that you put that really well, like to really kind of define them both, but yet they both have their strengths, right? I did kind of like, I meant to ask you about your time in recovery. How long have you been in recovery? I kind of skip around a little bit.
That's okay. That actually acknowledges one of the other differences, which is that SMART doesn't require the use of like time tracking, labels, higher power. If those things are valuable, please use them. Please just know that they're not required for participation or even like emphasized. So my last bet was August 15th of 2017, though that date is a little less crucial to me because I would say I entered into recovery on August 18th. So if I'm going by my recovery time, which I think is a little more valuable, it would be August 18th, 2017. So just over 6 years.
Nice. And you do make a good point because a lot of times people are like, you know, when I start to day count, I get overwhelmed with that. Or I think sometimes the day counting can really sink in the finality of the gambling, right? Especially if it's been your coping mechanism, if it's been with you a long time, like for me, it was with me for 15 years. The thought of not having gambling, even though it was like destroying my life, the thought of not having it was just as scary. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, so I understand when people say, well, every time I count my days, it's like, it messes me up and I get overwhelmed and, you know, then I don't meet my day and there's a lot of shame for that. You know what I mean? Like they lose their time or whatever and, or, you know, just their bet free time. Cause you don't lose the time that you worked on yourself. You don't lose the time that you worked on your recovery. You just lose that bet free day. And sometimes there's a lot of shame and stigma with that. And so I hear a lot of people talk about like, it's just better for me not to count days. Like it takes the heaviness out of it. And so it's great to know that there's a program out there that isn't dependent on the day counting.
Yeah. I think that there's this kind of growing awareness that recovery is more than abstinence. And so whereas a reoccurrence may happen, right? Gambling may reoccur. It doesn't dissuade or subtract from the amount that you've learned in the time between. I when I introduce this concept, I like to think of it, I'm a martial artist, and so I like to put it in the lens of a martial arts testing, right? If I'm testing for a black belt in Taekwondo and I have to do a board break and I don't break that board, they don't say you've learned nothing, it's time to go back to white belt. They say you weren't prepared for the test ahead of you. Let's look at the technique, let's back up a little bit and then give it another go. And that's more SMART's mentality is, okay, there was a test in front of you that you weren't quite prepared for. What can we do about that so that the next time it happens, because invariably we will face triggers and urges and all of that. So being able to better prepare ourselves for the next round is kind of the goal. So I just always like making that analogy because it also acknowledges that I'm a martial artist.
It does that. But I do want to, that jump me to another question though. I feel like I can have this conversation with you. That's not, you know, with taking all the judgment out and all the, like the preconceived notions is that there is, you know, going back to that shame and stigma around losing your days. Right. So there's a lot of women who enter a lot of people enter recovery, maybe not necessarily, they haven't necessarily like burned their life down. You know, they're not losing their home. They're kind of like, it's a problem because maybe they're spending too much time. It's a problem because, you know, they're putting things off because of their gambling. It's maybe not necessarily a financial hardship as it is for a lot of people who enter into recovery. And so, you know, they're just working to try and change their behaviors around gambling. They're working to try and change just their lifestyle in gambling, right? They're trying to take it out of the picture. But here's the thing, or even if somebody who has been harmed by gambling, they're still actively trying to work recovery, but then they have a slip or whatever they say. And, you know, and then it causes all this shame. But even though they're not necessarily causing harm to anybody else with their gambling, they're just maybe not comfortable with the amount of gambling that they're doing. But then there's this a lot of the shame and stigma attached to, you know, gambling when you're in recovery, right? So I guess my question is, how do you address somebody who wants to do better with their, like, not in a controlled gambling situation, because I don't personally choose those kind of conversations, but in a way that you can say, well, if you're gambling two, you know, like you go 6 months and you gamble once, but you were gambling like five times a month prior to that, but you kind of fall off the horse, you gamble, it kind of brings up those feels of like shame and stuff like that, and you proceed on. How do you talk to somebody who maybe has fallen off the wagon a few times, but they're just doing so much better than they were? Like, how do you let them know that they shouldn't feel shame for that, that they should, you know, continue on with their program? And even if gambling is a part of their life a couple times a year, like, there's no shame or stigma. Does that make sense? Did I make that make sense at all?
I think first of all, shame is something that's gonna happen, right? Like we can wax poetry about being proud of the progress and all of that. And I think that that does resonate and that will eventually be internalized. But right off the bat, it's really hard to combat shame. So rather, let's talk about what the shame represents. Let's talk about why it is that that might be a shameful thing for you, right? And that's a way kind of flipping the script and putting it back into maintaining motivation, right? Those things that you're ashamed of are your motivations, right? If you're ashamed because of what your family's going to think or because you weren't able to pay rent, right? Because your physiological needs like shelter are really important to you. So how do we, again, kind of prepare for that next time? How do we make sure that your physiological needs or your family or whatever are in better standing? And a lot of times that means not gambling, right? Like not pursuing that behavior anymore. So being able to acknowledge it, being able to process the shame in a somewhat productive way can also help to take some of that razor sharpness off of it. It can help dull it a little bit more. In my experience, the other side of it, and something that actually gets misconstrued a lot, is a lot of people think that smart recovery is a harm reduction model. Actually, it is an abstinence-based program. The idea is that if you're looking for harm reduction, these tools may still help you, but let's not confuse the fact that this is an abstinence-based program, right? We are working towards the elimination of that behavior. Not looking to cure it, not looking to say, there, you've done it. You can go back now. No, just acknowledging that if harm reduction is the pursuit, there may be some value here too. Those conversations, I mean, they vary person to person, right? It kind of depends on other factors. But in my line of work, it is typically about acknowledging the shame, using it, and kind of weaponizing it against your addiction rather than against yourself.
Oh, I like how you said that. And that was the perfect answer to the jumbled up question in my head, because, like, honestly, because it's like, how do you talk to somebody about shame? And what you're basically saying is identify the shame. Like, why do you feel shameful because you're gambling? Because you told somebody you wouldn't be gambling anymore, or because you know this is going to make things tight for the month and you're not going to be able to do something for somebody because of this? Or, you know, really get down to the bottom of why are you feeling shame? Is it And, you know, I'm a big advocate of The Body Keeps Score, which is a book, and it talks about how our body lets us know, you know, when we're in doing things or in situations that we really shouldn't be in. And, you know, there's so much more to that book, but that's my overall assessment of it is like, it's a really great book. You should check it out if you haven't, if you're listening and haven't. But it talks that, you know, so sometimes our bodies can just let us know, hey, this isn't what's right for us. You know, it brings up these emotions. Like I know when I'm maybe in a situation that isn't comfortable for me, I get really like my body gets really flushed. And like I just start to not feel right. And it's just interesting now that I'm so tuned into like every aspect of not only my body, my thoughts, like everything that's going on with me so that I can make sure that I'm just doing what I need to do. It's interesting how all these things kind of play into why we react the way we do, why we feel the way we do, and really breaking down that shame and really trying to identify it could be a big key to that. And I appreciate the way that you explain that out.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of acknowledgement and awareness, right? Like that to me was the key. I am somebody who was recently, within the last couple of years, diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder. So being able to identify and raise awareness around what symptoms may be presenting is a good way to kind of stave off the unwanted consequences. They're gonna be there. I'm not gonna be comfortable when experiencing those kinds of symptoms. But I think the same thing happens with urges and triggers, being able to identify that, like, oh, that is what's happening here. It's not that I have to go gamble, it's that I'm having an urge, and I wonder what else I can do. Right. I wonder how else I could respond to this in a way that's more aligned with my needs, my values, my goals, my ambitions. And I've started kind of being very real with people and saying, you know, gambling is an option. It's there. It exists. And it's one that we are familiar with. And there's some sense of comfort in that familiarity. We know what that looks like. So I wonder what else there is. I'm curious about what other consequences may come from other pathways, from other behaviors. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think it's always just tough to navigate the real life conversation of it, right? The real life, like, you know, there's so much just kind of prioritizing abstinence as a whole, but also having the conversation around if that doesn't happen, you know, or those situations. And that's always just a tough way to navigate. And, you know, when you've got a program that really kind of helps you just keep building, even when we step off, you know, but we get back on and we keep building, and it prioritizes that, not necessarily what you've lost by doing that, but what you can gain by getting back up and moving forward. So, let's talk recovery dharma. Let's talk about what you know about that.
Yeah, so recovery dharma, so cognitive behavioral therapy actually has a few different elements to it. There's the cognitive approach, but then there's also the dialectical behavioral therapy, which has a lot more to do with like your internal monologue. How is it that we talk to ourselves, and what is it that we're experiencing in a more tangible way, right? So, being able to do those kind of full body scans through meditation. Meditation looks like a lot of different things, right? It's not always sitting cross-legged and humming for 45 minutes, right? It can be a 30-second breathing exercise. And what Recovery Dharma does is it is, at least from my understanding of it and a couple meetings that I've gone to, is that it really focuses on shrinking down that moment and just being aware of what your body is doing. Where is there tension? What sorts of thoughts are coming up when you're trying to clear your head? Now, you can let those pass. You can kind of like a leaf on the water, right? You can just kind of watch it float away. And then be able to kind of collect that data and say, wow, while I was trying to meditate, I was thinking about my family a lot. I'm curious about that. The actual recovery dharma practice is a Buddhist approach. So it takes the principles of Buddhism and kind of applies it to recovery. And it seems, and from what I've gathered, that Buddhism and dialectical behavioral therapy have a lot in common. I'm not sure if one inspired the other, if Buddhism inspired dialectical behavioral therapy, but in the spiritual realm, they match. This is one of those wonderful moments where some sense of spirituality aligns with a science approach, right? And they are so connected that it's beneficial regardless of which way you're looking at it. So whether you're looking at it from a DBT or a Buddhist or spiritual approach, it doesn't really matter. You're getting the kind of same end result. And the couple meetings that I've been to, I mean, it can be pretty potently emotional to sit with yourself, to just acknowledge that, like, wow, this 5-minute exercise that we did in meditation was really overwhelming. Like that presented a whole lot of emotions. And then I think the next step is to say, okay, so what about those emotions? What are we going to do about it? Counseling, some sense of processing, journaling, whatever it is. But again, it's about raising awareness. It's about recognizing that there's something there that might require some attention in order to process through it. The meeting structure is very, I found it very comfortable. I found it very, check-ins, very familiar in most of our groups. But then that idea of an actual spiritual meditative exercise, yeah, for somebody who is a little more agnostic, I really had to kind of look at it through the lens of DBT and check-in and body scan and inventory. But again, that end result was the same. Wow, there's a lot of emotions happening here. There's something in my, I guess what you would call soul, was aching for this. So again, not as well versed in recovery dharma, but I do think that the two, much like SMART and 12-step, can be two pillars of a similar goal. So too can recovery dharma work into that. So too can Celebrate Recovery, which is a Christian-based 12-step program. And all of these different models, I don't think that they're as competitive as a lot of people think they might be. I think a lot of times there's a lot that aligns them. So yeah, hopefully that gives some sense of an answer, but I'm certainly no expert in recovery dharma.
No, I think that sounds great. And we can maybe do another episode more on like the other different pathways that are out there for people. So just to kind of like sum up this episode, what would you say to somebody out there listening that is still just kind of conflicted on which way to go? Like doesn't necessarily understand all of it, but kind of wants to explore and do those things. What would you say to somebody?
That's a great question. I mean, right off the bat, my first thought is, if there's something that seems interesting, even if you don't find as much value from it as you had hoped, there's still good data to be collected from trying, right? Don't be afraid to try something and not have it succeed in the way you want, because you may find a success in some other way. Whether that's going to a SMART meeting and realizing, like, yep, that's not for me. Okay, now you know that, right? You have tried it. Kudos to you for attempting a new thing. And now you know for sure that this isn't the pathway for you. So now what else is there, right? Like, and try it again and try it again. I always tip my hat to people who are willing to try something over and over again in a different way to get different results. It's not the definition of insanity if you're making those variable changes. If you're introducing some new concept, then it's not really insane. It's perseverance. And I think we in the recovery community have a tremendous amount of resilience. And when we can recognize that we have that resilience and that it's just time to apply it in another way, there's not a lot that's going to stand in your way at that point. We know what it feels like to get knocked down. We know what it feels like to get back up. We know how it feels to try and not succeed. We know how it feels to try and overwhelmingly succeed. And so not being afraid to try that in a new way towards a new goal that hopefully is aligned with ambitions and goals and values and all of those things. There's something truly beautiful about that, something that we in the recovery community have a very unique experience with. And so go get them. Like, let's give it a try. Let's see what's out there and really experiment with what's going to be successful for you. That is the non-scripted version of what I tend to tell people.
Yeah, that's a great thing to say. And you know what, like nobody will advocate for us better than ourselves, right? Like if we're going through something and we need to figure this out, nobody will advocate better for you than you. And the best way to do that is to explore all the options out there, and like people like you and me will continue to bring you those different options and let you know kind of what's out there for you to try. And that's the community of the podcasters, right? To just to connect and to bring information and resources and hope and our own experiences to all of it. So, yeah, I really appreciate you taking the time out today on this Sunday afternoon to visit with me.
It was absolutely my pleasure. It's been too long since we've had a conversation. So,
Yeah.
and to your point with regards to podcasting, I mean, there's so many wonderful podcasts out there, whether it's the Broke Girl Society or All In or Fall In. I could go on, but the idea that there are people willing to not only share their experience, but in such a wide platform. I mean, this is, I think, one of the most key elements of breaking down the stigma, right? You and Brian Hatch, we are creating an environment of open discussion and using technology that has never been able to be utilized before. And I think that there's something really remarkable about people who can do that, regardless of the motivation. Again, we're going to build and maintain it, but I'm going to try to keep my composure here. It is very rare and sometimes not even advised for people to go so public and share their experience, regardless of what platform people use to share their story. I think that it's a remarkable endeavor. I know that you and I have had a lot of conversations about what it means to be courageous or brave. And so I'm not gonna use those words, but I will say that there is something remarkable, worthy of remark in what it is that these podcasts are doing. And I can't thank people who came before me enough, for the work that they did to really open that door. And so I appreciate the heck out of you.
Well, thank you. Same, right back at you. And I think, you know, the community that we're building and people are like, you know, people are really taken to these podcasts and they're really making a difference and by doing what we're doing. And so, yeah, I'm grateful for everybody in this community that's putting themselves out there and sharing the resources and having those hard conversations. Because that's how we're going to break the stigma of this. And that's how we're going to help people find the help that they need and to do it safely.
Yeah.
So, we'll just keep doing what we're doing.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, I'm going to put all the websites for these different recoveries that we talked about, smartrecovery.org, recoverydharma.org, all those will, I think it's .org. Might should have double checked that, but I'm pretty sure. I've given it out enough that I think I know. So I will put all those in the show notes. If you're interested, you know, explore it and we'll go from there.
Awesome.
All
Thanks,
right.
Christina.
Thanks.